All right. Well, I'll just talk a little bit louder. How's that? So that's what I'll have to do so everyone can hear me. I really can't control the volume much from here because it's Zoom, and unfortunately the Zoom platform does this periodically. And there's really very little I can do about it. So I'm pushing the volume on the mic as much as I possibly can. Up the gain too. So it's about as loud as I can possibly get it. So I hope that's good for people. Well, anyway, hi. It's so good to be back here, back on the air again, live. I didn't do the show for 2 weeks. I was out in Seattle visiting my young granddaughter, who's not quite one. And then my grandson showed up too. I was lucky enough that within 2 days of each other, I got both a grandson and a granddaughter. And the grandson came as a 10-year-old boy, as a result of my son getting married to a woman who had a son. And then 2 days later, my granddaughter was born. So I was just out there, and it was just impossible to try to make all the technology and everything work remotely like that. So here I am back though. So I apologize for those of you who might have been surprised that I wasn't here, but here I am. Everybody's saying that the sound is good now. Excellent. So glad to hear it. And as always, please just chat in your questions that you might have on either Facebook or on YouTube. I'm doing my best to monitor the chat. And also, if you'd like to call in and speak and ask a question, we can interact. The number is 888-627-6008. And I called the show today, "What is Love Anyway?" And it came about because a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, asked me a question about love. And the question she asked was, she heard of, you know, you always hear about God is love and the universe is love and everything is really love and our true nature is love. And it all seemed rather perplexing because we don't, you know, we're not really seeing a whole lot of it right now in the world. And really, if you look at, you know, animals eating each other and, at some point the sun is going to basically expand and completely consume the first four planets and a lot of the asteroids. The others are going to get burnt a bit, and then it's going to shrink back into a white dwarf or a black hole or something, and it's all gone. So it doesn't really seem like it's a very loving universe. But I would invite, rather than to try to discuss it philosophically, I would invite everyone to simply notice something about the way, about everything, about yourself. From the time before we can have learned anything, before we have any concepts, before we have any words, we know what love is. We have, it's clearly identified. Your love for your, first it starts out your love for your parents, your love for your toys and love for your siblings. Even when there's disagreements and stuff going on between you and everything doesn't seem quite all right, there's still something there. And I could call it just a bonding of the body and all of that. But I think we all detect, we can sense intuitively that there's really something to that. Then we get older, we have friends that we love, we have things we love to do, we have foods we love to eat. We fall in love, and nobody has to tell you you're in love. Nobody, you know, there's not like, you know, 10 questions you go through and check them off and say, yep, I'm, you just know. Nobody teaches it to you. There's no manual for it. You just know. And so there's something about that that seems to me to be transcendental. Now, I've said things like, you know, the earth is benevolent, the universe is benevolent, you know, it's God is love, all is about love, everything is about love. But I really don't want it to be just kind of this idea. It's not this pretty spiritual idea, because if that's all it was, It really couldn't stand the test of time, and it certainly couldn't stand up to adversity. But it does. We always keep coming back to it. And I don't think there's anybody alive on the earth now that isn't reasonably conscious and self-aware, that doesn't recognize that the cause of all the problems in the world is hate. Period. Now, some of this hate is completely and totally contrived. Well, all of it is completely and totally contrived. Some of it is downright lies projected out as propaganda. Some of it comes from having the experience of feeling pinched, of feeling like your survival is in jeopardy. And according to Maslow, remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the only time human beings become violent is when their sense of existence, survival, gets threatened. Other than that, we are very docile. We're very patient. We're very loving with each other. Only when we feel that we are our being is threatened, our family is threatened, our life is threatened, do we begin to contract and make boundaries and make enemies. We begin to see that, look out and see, well, this person's taking way more than they deserve, and we're being robbed blind, and these people are taking the jobs. And then people who are in power love to use that to manipulate things so that they divide and conquer. It's a very old strategy. It goes all the way back to Alexander, maybe even before. Yeah, I'm sure it goes before. It goes all the way back when human beings were struggling over resources. If you divide, if you make somebody the enemy, then you can basically pick both their pockets and sell them weapons, which is in fact what's going on in the world. So how does love, possibly enter into this and offer an antidote for it? But let's look at it. I mean, if there isn't a loving, benevolent solution to what the earth is facing right now, what we as human beings are facing right now, then there is no hope. The only alternative is some particular group to become so powerful and dominant that they basically wipe everybody else out, which is the strategy we've been living under for 10,000 years. It is yet to succeed. And I think after a 10,000 year trial and error, one might begin to get the idea that maybe it's not going to, that maybe this is a completely bad strategy. But if there is no hope for that, if there is no possibility, if this kind of conflict and hatred is built into the fabric of the universe, how can it possibly stand? I mean, Christ said that, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And of course, hatred is a division, whereas love is a unifier. So the question becomes, is love powerful enough to undo and unravel these layers of hate and greed and selfishness that have compounded to the point where humanity is on the verge of wiping itself out? Clearly, the ideas we've had about love up to this point haven't been adequate. Is it because love isn't adequate, or is it because we really haven't delved deeply enough into it? There have been those occasions, like with Mahatma Gandhi, where his refusal to be violent, his refusal to meet violence with violence, with eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, his refusal to do that, but instead simply hold to the principle that unity and love were far superior and a far better way to live, a more truthful way to live than violence and division. And without firing a shot, he got the British to leave India. And of course, at that time, the British were the empire of the world. I mean, the sun didn't set on the British Empire. This was no small feat. It's not like they're the, you know, what they've been reduced to now, a little island up in the north there. They used to have the whole world used to be theirs. Now it belongs to the United States, and there'll be somebody else after that. But I think you're getting the point. He did it without resorting to violence. So what was it about that love that made that possible? Well, what he didn't do, which I think is kind of the key to the whole thing, is he did not make any division whatsoever. He didn't react or reject the British. He didn't turn them into monsters. He didn't try to turn Indians against them. His whole point was a unification. Nelson Mandela did the same thing when he got out of prison. He realized that if he established a black regime that was oppressive to whites, and they were the minority, they would have been easy to oppress, that he would be guilty of exactly the same thing that put him into prison for 27 years, and the bloodshed and the horrors simply would never stop. So he did exactly the opposite. He left many of the people in positions of power in the government that were quite white. Matter of fact, some that had even helped put him into prison. He went to a different level of love than most of us know. See, for most of us, love is personal. Love is I have feelings for someone. I have an affection for someone. I have a relationship with someone. I have, and it's very, very personal. That love will always turn to hate when somebody is threatened. Always. You can't help it. If my love only extends to my group, my community, or my tribe, then whenever the tribe is threatened, I will become violent towards whoever's threatening it. It's inevitable, because when survival has been threatened, has been pushed to the edge, it will react, and we're kind of wired to do that. So is there another level we can get to? Is there another level that's being pointed at, that's actually been modeled for us by a Mahatma Gandhi or a Nelson Mandela? And of course, you know, the greatest example in the West is Christ, who completely forgave his enemies. He just refused to do anything except bless. He refused. He even gave his life for it. And of course, a lot of people have done that. You know, you hear about the stories of soldiers in the military during war and that sort of thing, who basically sacrifice themselves for their mates. People sacrificing themselves to protect their children and the like. But it really illustrates the kind of love that we need to be aspiring to. The kind of love that isn't personal, that isn't just me and my tribe. Because the reality, folks, is we're being pushed to it. The idea that somehow one tribe is going to become dominant over all of the other tribes is simply destroying the planet. It's destroying everything that human beings have worked for. And so that kind of division just simply cannot be allowed to stand anymore. But how do we do it in the face of just horrendous cruelty and barbarity and evil? How do we forgive the unforgivable? How do we forgive our adversaries? Forgive those who are really trying to hurt you, who are trying to kill you. This is probably the most difficult thing a human being has to face, and it is the most deeply spiritual thing a human being has to face. When your life becomes something more than simply my own survival or the survival of my tribe or me making sure I get my share. We have to go beyond these. We have to. If we don't, quite frankly, we don't deserve to survive. The earth will survive. No matter how badly we mess it up, and we're capable of messing it up pretty badly. A nuclear winter for several years, pretty much most life wiped out, but not all, because the earth is a living organism. And it has millions, billions of years. If we were to completely exterminate ourselves and take most everything with it, well, we deserve to go. But the earth won't. It'll take a while. It'll take a couple of million years. But life will emerge again. This living being that we know of as the earth will emerge again. So it's really just up to us. Who do we want to be? Who do you want to be? And this becomes very practical. You know, maybe you're led to be part of some group like, you know, Greenpeace or MoveOn.org or, you know, some organization that you believe in that you think is, you know, taking the right position. But I would urge everybody to consider that maybe it's the taking of a position that is causing the problem. Maybe that is actually the thing that is getting in the way. Because the moment I take a position, the moment I say this is the right way, I have made everybody who doesn't think that way wrong. And I have created the very conflict I'm trying to undo. So how do you live without a position? Well, this to me is where the deeper meaning of love comes in. Because love isn't position free. It's not, you know, just, it's not a milquetoast, just because it's not waffling in the breeze. But it is not attached to any point of view as a fixed point of view, as a, you know, as a philosophical or religious necessity, as a tenet, as a fundamental principle that must be obeyed. Love is quite capable of walking into any circumstance with no agenda and no position and seek that which is the most loving in that moment, in that place, in that situation, with no attachment to how it should go or what it should look like, but simply a deep desire for the very best to emerge, the kindest, the gentlest, the sweetest, the most progressive, the most helpful. That kind of love is rare. But that's the kind of love that we need. I mean, let's face it, if I walk into any circumstance and I'm holding a position as to how things should go, I have already created conflict. I may have even already made enemies because there's others who feel the same way. But if I walk completely with the deep desire to simply find the best, the most loving that this situation can produce, even if there's not much of it, I am free. I am capable of being totally present. I am capable of making things happen that otherwise would have ended up as a conflict. Somewhere in every circumstance around the world, there's got to be some soul that is not taking a position, that is not trying to dominate, that is not trying to force their will, but is only concerned about what is best, but doesn't hold any idea as to what is best. Instead, it lets love itself reveal it. And that is a very, very different way of being. Let's see, somebody just said, Klesu once said, I cannot lose my existence. I don't exist in form, I just exist. And then somebody else said, oh, same person. What is survival? There is only survival of the form. Yes. I haven't been speaking in pure non-dual terms right now because I'm reaching out to anyone who might want to hear this, because this question has many, many different levels. But you're absolutely right. At the essence of our fear of survival is the deep conviction that I am the body, and that this body is my life, and that to lose this body is to lose my life, and potentially, depending on how your beliefs work, to lose this body is to lose life permanently, period. It also presumes a reality of scarcity, that there's not enough to go around, and that somehow I'm going to have to fight to get mine. And if I do, and I get mine, and it is a matter of, live or die, then I'm perfectly justified in doing that. But at the heart of that is the belief that somehow your life is temporal, that you are dependent upon the body, that you are not a spiritual being, that you are not who you actually are, that you are not anything, you're not consciousness, but you are completely a product of material conditions and circumstances. And the reality is, most people, the vast majority of people, live their entire life with that as a fact. They believe that to be the truth. And as you all probably know, if you believe it, you will experience it, even if it isn't true. Let's see. GP, how to handle negative people in our lives, especially my family? That's where most of them are, right? Most of the negative people, for some reason, they all collected in my family. What's up with that? I try to be positive and influence them, but also sometimes they are really, really negative. It's hard to make law of attraction work this way, right? I saw that. Thank you. Thank you. I'll get right after this question. I'll get to you, Ethel. Thank you. Okay. It takes two to make a conflict. The only way you can have a conflict with people in your life, well, yes, there's only one way, and that is you can't simply allow them to be the way they are. But there could be many reasons why. You know, when you're around negative people, we're afraid that somehow their negativity is going to be contagious. Like you said, it's hard to manifest anything, to do the law of attraction when you're around really negative people. Well, only if you take their negativity as your own. You know, when you're around really negative people, I find it happens to me occasionally, and there's really nothing to say. I have nothing to say. I don't say anything. I just kind of bide my time, and I do not let their negativity affect me. I don't have a belief that somehow their negative vibe is going to make me feel negative. If it does, then you should be really, really grateful that those negative people are in your life, because they're revealing to you that part, those parts of you that have yet to be redeemed, that are still weak, that are still attached to something. Nobody can influence you. The world's greatest salesman cannot sell you anything if you don't buy. You can even feel the negative vibe of other people in your body and in your emotional system, but that's not your vibe. You are simply sensitive to the environment. And so whether a negative energy is coming up because it's coming to free the environment, or if it's some old belief coming up in you, or if it's some kind of reactive pattern that hasn't been dealt yet with yet, they're all the same. They are not powerful. They have no influence over you unless you decide they do. Your belief in them gives them power and nothing else. Nothing can control you except your beliefs about yourself. So the fact that it's your question, it's hard, let me see, it's hard to make LOA work this way, right? Wrong. That is a belief. And it is your belief that it's hard to make it work this way that makes it hard to work this way, not the circumstances. Do you get that? You are totally free, totally, from beginning to end, top to bottom. You are so free, you can create bondage for yourself. Only your beliefs influence you, not somebody else. This is so powerful to get, because when you see that, you will no longer be afraid of others. You'll no longer be concerned about others. And a compassion for others will arise that is a way deeper form of love than you've known before. So what if they're negative? They're suffering. If you take on their negativity and you start thinking their negativity is influencing you, now you're suffering. Now everybody's suffering. Okay, so where in this mix is the light, is the light of consciousness, is the light of love that's going to dispel it? As long as you're going along with it, it is your belief in it that creates the results and not the circumstances. Oh, that's so powerful to see. So very powerful to see. So chew that over and just pay attention to what you believe about what you're experiencing rather than the experiencing itself. Just notice what's happening. There's just an energy. You're feeling an energy. That's all. Everything after that is a story concocted by your mind. And if you believe that story, it will become your experience. If you don't believe it, it won't. Alrighty, Doug, I'm ready for Ethel. We have a live caller on the radio network, so I'm going to let her speak before I pick up these other questions on the chat.
Am I there?
Hey, you are here.
Hey, G, first of all, let me say thank you. Let me just start there. I just, you know, just thank you. But I also want to say, it's not that I'm oblivious to everything that's going on in the world, but I live in a loving world. My essence is love, and I'm understanding that more, and so much of that understanding has to do with your teaching. And I read somewhere, someone said, in order to have world peace, we got to have inner peace. If everybody had inner peace, we would have world peace. Okay, and that's just the way this thing goes, starts inside of us. Okay, so with that, I'm understanding also, God is love. God is fulfillment. Love is fulfillment. Anytime I'm living in this loving space, I recognize the value of it, and it just doesn't get, this is where we have to be. And again, this is really becoming more apparent in my experience listening to you. You know, over the years, I've been working on this. So if I have any question at all, and I do have this question, I was listening to, I think it was Abraham, and this guy was saying, you know, he understands these teachings, but finding that loving space, you know, finding that love and calling forth that love that is always within me. As for example, finding the feeling place, that's what the word I'm looking for, the feeling of love. And it's already within me, it's accessible to me. So my question would be, how can I, how would I say it, just have more of that? I'm not sure best how to express it. I just want more of that.
Yeah, as long as you believe that love is some kind of state that you can go in and out of, it will always be elusive.
Okay.
It has to be your nature. What it means by saying that God is love or love is God, it means your real being is love. Yes. It is light that bathes everything in love. But there's a couple of problems with that. Not with it, but with the understanding of it. One is the beliefs we have about God, and the other is the beliefs we have about love. When you experience that place of freedom, that place of openness and spaciousness and a feeling of oneness, that oneness is love.
Yeah.
The oneness of being is love. Love, everything we know of love, every experience we have of love, the sense is a sense of intimacy and unity with what we're doing, with what, things we love, things we like, people we like, circumstance, everything is a feeling of unity with it. At the heart of all feelings of unity is the essential unity, the oneness of being itself. The love or God, the essence of all things, is one. It is from there that our experience of love takes place, which is many as one. But the essence of it is a pure oneness, the one irreducible, indivisible being, which is what, you know, humans have named God. That is what you are. It is not what a state that you get to. People ask me all the time, well, I had this experience. I had the experience of oneness. How do I get back to it? Well, as long as you think there's oneness over here, and then there's me over here, that oneness is some kind of an experience that I had, you have created too.
Yeah. Let me say something, GP. When I use the word God, I just, you know, I rarely use it because everybody got their own ideas about what God is. And I just kind of threw that in. And I do recognize I am love. You know, I am love. So I'm really enjoying what you're saying. And just to, but I'm getting what you say. Let's not, it's a state that I am. That is my, I am love. I guess that's it. That's it. I mean, I would, you know, the word God, I just kind of put that out there because it is my understanding that we do use that word. And love is the answer, whatever we call it. If we have that feeling space of love, and I'm learning this, I don't care what it is, if I turn towards love, not so much away from the situation, turn to towards love, the answer is within it. It is fulfilling, and all the answers come from that. So I am appreciating what you're saying, but I did just want to kind of clarify that God thing, but I know I am love. So go ahead.
Right. Love will, love by its nature will unify.
Mm-hmm.
It will also expose that which is causing disunity, and that's really important.
I love that.
My deep feeling about what's going on in the world today is there's just been a lot of self-deception, a lot of ego masquerading as having value, masquerading as being, intelligent, masquerading about having people's interest at heart. There's a lot of that going on. All of it has to be exposed. It's really quite amazing that when Christ was asked about the end of the world, he said, "You see this temple? There will not be one stone set upon another that shall not be torn down." He was not talking about the physical temple. He was talking about the superstructure of our beliefs. He was talking about how we view the world in our minds, not the, which is, of course, all we ever actually experience. That is, I mean, we all think we're experiencing the world, but in fact, the world is just too vast for any human being to grasp. So we're always just walking through our own ideas about it. If we will just recognize that it is impossible for anybody to have the truth. Mm-hmm. That makes us humble, makes us approachable. And when we become humble and teachable, suddenly all of the hidden beliefs, the hidden arrogance, the hidden conceit, the hidden greed, that has been masquerading as something valid just comes to the surface. And that is what we are seeing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That this deep belief in separation is being exposed at every level. We're finding that our whole infrastructure of our politics and our economics and our cultures and our religions have all been based on it. And of course it's going to be exposed. Of course it's going to come to the surface. Of course it's going to fall apart. It has to, because it isn't true. And I mean, it isn't true. It isn't love. Love and truth are one and the same. Love unifies, and truth cuts everything that is untrue or unloving. And in our current state of consciousness, we absolutely must have both. So that's where wisdom comes from. That's how it grows. So we're learning the real nature of love. And that doesn't mean it's going to gloss over cruelty and greed and all that. Exactly the opposite. It's going to expose it. It's going to shout it from the rooftops. It isn't going to be able to hide itself anymore. And of course, where is it hiding? In people's hearts and in people's minds. If it wasn't in our hearts and minds, it couldn't be in our politics. It couldn't be in our governments. It couldn't be anywhere. It has to be first. That's the place that it gets reflected from. So it does become a matter of each of us eradicating from ourselves anything that is unlike love. Eradicating our own arrogance, our own conceit. But the only way to do that, is to recognize that love is your actual nature. So what you're eradicating is not something real, not something you. You're not really letting go of anything. You are simply removing that which was never innate or natural to you in the first place.
Right.
And that's not a hard thing to let go when you realize that it's never been me. It's been a mistake that was made right from the get-go. And then love can emerge, and wisdom, because you can't have one without the other.
I love it.
Thank you, Ethel.
I love it. That's just my final thing, is that that is so accurate. What I love, just staying connected with that love, it pushes up all that other gobbledygook that's unnatural. And then I can see it for what it is, the nothingness. It's just, you know, the conditioning. So, and it's wonderful. So, listen, thank you so much, G. We love you.
Thank you, Ethel.
Answers my question.
thank you so much. Wow. So very powerful. Love has to push to the surface everything that is unlike love. And so in our world today, we're really being forced to take a completely different approach to this stuff. I mean, look, the problems have become so extreme and so severe that we really have run out of moves. We have run out of our ability. Humanity does not have the capacity to deal with what is happening right now until and unless there is a significant shift in consciousness. If we continue along the same lines of thinking and believing that we have been, I think it's quite clear to every one of us where it's going to end. And it's not going to be pretty. There simply is no way. We have run out of moves for this current state of consciousness that we are all indulging. So a new state of consciousness, a whole new way of being is in the works, has to be. And I'm encouraging everybody to go deeper than you ever did before. And we hear the word love, and God is love, and the universe is love, and all of that. We go, gee, that's really good, may even feel really good about it. But have we ever stopped to think, well, what does that mean? I mean, I look around, I don't see a lot of love. You know, I don't see people making sacrifices for each other. I see a lot of conflict and polarization and exploitation. So if either that's bullshit, and we can just drop all that conversation right now, or there's way more here than we realized. And I'm taking the position that there's way more here than we realized, and I'm going after it, because if it isn't true, if it is bullshit, then we're all screwed anyway. So either this is it, right? That this is the direction, or there isn't one, which means we're all being invited to go to a higher level of both wisdom and love than we've ever known before. And, you know, the reason I started doing these satsangs is because I want to bring people to that higher level of wisdom and love. And as the questioner had asked before about, if I feel myself to be this shivering little mortal struggling to survive in the world, even if I've created all these great systems that make it, that, you know, make my survival possible, as long as I have that belief about myself, there will be threats. Until I discover love as my very nature and recognize that love is immortal, it cannot be killed. It was never born, and it's never going to die. It is simply what is, without what is not. Until I probe that deeply and discover that to be true, I will always be subject to the ups and downs. I will always be subject to the threat of my extinction. And the threat of your personal extinction is now the threat to humanity as a whole. And so this is the direction to go. To me, the thing I like about what's happening is it's forcing people to no longer be nonchalant about it, to take our spiritual inquiry to the next level because we have to. You know, this isn't a cappuccino awakening. This isn't just going to sit around with people and have nice conversations about spirituality and non-duality. It's beyond that. This isn't going to be a philosophical sewing circle. This is becoming a matter of life and death. And as a result, you know, when our survival is threatened is all of the mediocre, unimportant, insignificant things get dumped very quickly. You're not concentrating on anything except that. Now, where do we concentrate? What's the actual solution to it? Ultimately, to me, the solution is to discover that you are immortal. Not going to be, but you are. But the only way that can be realized is if you recognize that you are not the body. You are not that which is coming and going. You are not just this form that appeared at one time and is going to disappear in another time, and then a soul going from one body to a body. None of that is you. That you are the one that is aware of all of it. And if you can look at that, if you can look at the experience of knowing itself, the experience of experiencing, you find that it has never, ever changed. What has been experienced has changed constantly, but the one experiencing has not changed in the slightest. And there lies the secret to immortality, because you find that with it being changeless, it is deathless. It is birthless. It didn't have a beginning, and it's not going to have an end. And that is love. And when that sense of immortality expresses itself in action, you see love in action. We identify it as love. It has the perfume of love to it, because there's no self-interest in it. It isn't simply trying to get something from someone for its own survival. Its survival is not in question. Therefore, everything becomes a gift and not a business transaction. Let's see. Thank you, love from London. Wonderful. Shanika Ndunji, I don't know how to spell your name or say your name, I'm sorry. Finally, I have seen so many famous, rich, and genius people die, but none were able to take anything with them. So why don't people understand this illusion? It's a very good point, isn't it? Yeah. The ego will always cling to something to give it a sense of continuity and perpetuity. My possessions, my family, my legacy, always. Because it is inherently unstable and it is inherently mortal. That sense of identity. But until that sense of identity, the ego is seen through, what else are you going to do? Yeah, we have examples all over the place. Nobody takes it with them. Everything goes. Everything goes. The body goes. Everything. The body doesn't disappear. Now, some people, the strict materialist will say, well, that's it. Life is over. Nothing continues on because that's all there is. But it really doesn't take much inquiry to recognize that there's something much deeper going on, that there's something much, much more vital, something strong, something powerful, something that does not seem to be coming and going. We just have to look and see it. And then seeing the innate impermanence of everything, how everything comes and goes, that nothing can be held on to, absolutely nothing can be held on to, that causes us to turn towards that which doesn't change, to find the one thing that doesn't change. And that one thing that doesn't change, we discover quite mercifully and quite beautifully, is our very self, the real me. And I have simply been identifying with that which is changing. And in that identification of that which is changing, I become very greedy. I become possessive of it. I want to hold on to it. I don't want to let go of it. I don't want anybody else to threaten it. But it all comes from not knowing who you are. If you know who you are, you realize that you are the witness of everything that's coming and going. You're not coming and going. If you were coming and going, how would you know? You'd just disappear. You'd be gone. Foomp. You're not coming and going. And if you were coming and going, you couldn't see anything else coming and going. But the fact that you see everything coming and going means you're the one thing that isn't. This is your immortality. This is your true self. To me, it is just so self-evident. And I say it a thousand different ways to try to make it pierce through that veil. But that sense of identification is so strong. It is just so wanting to be a person, to be somebody, to be this individual. And yet, if we look at everything that makes up the individual, none of it is stable. All of it has changed. Something's very quickly, something's very slowly, but they've all changed. Nothing has ever been the same. Even this body is changing. The rate of a million cells a second dying and no one's being born. Millions a second. I mean, it's inconceivable. This nothing is ever the same. And the amount of time it took me to say that sentence, the universe changed. But yet you didn't. But if you're identified with what does change, if you think that's what you are, you will feel the threat of mortality. Not because it's real, but because you believe it. As I was saying earlier to the fellow who was asking about the law of attraction, whatever you believe, you experience. It isn't reality. It isn't the truth. You don't create reality. I've always disagreed with that statement in those circles. But you're creating your own reality. You are creating an experience. Reality is timeless. Reality never changes. If it did, we'd all be screwed. It is the constant that allows us to have a place to come and rest. It allows us to have a home to return to. So you've got another question here. Is there anything higher than love? If you're talking about human love and human affection, yes, there is. Because human affection is tainted in a sense, in that it loves this and not that. Human love is like that. That's where all the conflict comes from. I love my group, my race, my gender, my religion, you know, my culture, my country, more than yours. So love, when it is constricted, when it becomes personal, it becomes narrow and small and loses, it appears to lose its infinite nature. And yes, there's a love that is much, much higher than that. It's like, I always like to use the example that people can understand of music. Everything that is music, every song ever written, hummed, played on whatever instrument, has all been music. It's had this character identified. That's music. You can tell. But if you ask anybody, what is music? You couldn't possibly describe it. All you could do is hum a tune, and they go, oh, that's music? Well, no, that's one music. I mean, but I can hum you this one too. And when you look, you see the range of expression of music is quite literally infinite. And yet, how do you describe music itself? You can't. That's love. Love is indescribable in its essence. It's unknowable. It's ineffable in its purest form, just like light in its purest form is totally invisible. It's indetectable. But yet it is identified when it becomes made manifest. It's clear that that's what it is. And ultimately, I know this is very controversial when I say something like this, ultimately you'll see that even the worst hate is simply a horrid misinterpretation of love. It is simply a love that is so small that it wants to protect itself and its own at the expense of others. It isn't big enough to include the other. And I would venture to say that what we are being asked to do in the world is to abandon our tribal loyalties, to find that it is all of us or none of us. We are no longer many. We are one. There's only one tribe. My love can't be so small that I think I'm going to survive at your expense. It's not true. Nobody gets out of here. it's all or nothing at this point. And that's where we come to see a deep, much deeper love. Just look at your own life. Look at all the people that you've cut off, the people that you have dismissed, the people you've pushed away, the circumstances you've pushed away, the opportunity, all of it. And look, it's just been a love that's too small. Make it bigger. Make it so big that it takes in the entire universe. Make it so big that even the ego gets absorbed into it. And it doesn't even have any place anymore. It's just lost in this vastness of pure egoless love. And of course, love doesn't have an ego. It couldn't. It's just love. Let's do a quick time check here. 54. Oh, right. Coming right up on it. Everything moves except you. What moves? Thought, consciousness, the images in mind move. They're not really moving because they're just images. Oh, that's a whole subject in and of itself. Thank you for asking that, Remington. I wish I could get a better answer to that. Does breathing and awareness have a connection? No. Everything happens within awareness, including breathing. Breathing comes and goes. Breathing starts and stops. Awareness does not. We have different experiences, depending on pranayama. We have different experiences. We can do different things with our breath, and it will affect things. But notice that all the different things we do and all the effect it has is all perceived within this pure awareness. When this body drops and dies, the awareness will be there, aware of it doing that. It is not sustained by breath. It is completely and totally itself. It is being. Being that is not dependent upon anything other than itself. But this is your being. Just your being, not abstract. It's yours. Thank you all for being here. I got a free class I'm doing on Tuesday. Just go to gpwatch.com/. See you next week.